From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour as we are now into our 21st year. So we're old enough to vote. No, you can vote at 18 now. And Julie Sly, the executive editor. We got to pump that title
Oh,
up.
No, that makes me sound so old and grizzled.
Okay. CEO?
Although that does describe me, old and grizzled.
Grizzled.
I just want to use that word.
Julie is the editor of the Catholic Herald magazine. Grizzled, yeah, you know, we both kind of enjoy words, and I've often wondered about, I like that word too. It's usually...
I heard a new one yesterday. What was it? Loofla.
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 I have not heard that one.
It's like something that is kind of made from a gourd, and...
Oh, yeah, yeah,
you, and loofa. Like, do
loofa.
Kind of
it's
like
a sponge.
Yes, and you can kind of use it on your foot, or if you have dry skin
was
or something.
I saw, it was a piece on TV, local television... Like one of those traveling California or something, and it was in Reedley, down the valley, in the San Joaquin Valley, and this guy was raising these gourds, and then he had to scoop out the seed. It looked like a
pumpkin,
a pumpkin sort of, but it was kind of more long and elongated.
Like a squash.
And it's called a loofah, and it's a
loofah. That's not when it's not loofla, loofah.
Loofah, and it's not a sponge per se, but like it's a sponge is an animal, right? I believe
that lives in the ocean. Sea anemone or something.
Yeah, but it's an actual. But it's supposed to.
And do they grow them just to sell them for that purpose?
Exactly.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah, they showed him beating it to get the seeds out, and I had the same thing. I thought, I don't know, I'd heard of a loofah, but I had no idea where it came from. So very, very interesting.
That word is not in this issue in the magazine.
Is grizzled in this issue?
I don't think
Does that come from grizzly bear, do you think?
Probably. Yeah.
Grizzled. It's usually used to refer to a male. You would
Is
not
it?
Call a woman grizzled. But
not if you want it to live.
Well, there was a guy. What? Grizzly Adams, remember?
Yeah, Grizzly
Adams. Who was he? He was like a TV.
He was on a TV show.
And he was kind of grizzled.
I like Davy Crockett.
Yeah, probably has a beard and
you're really dating yourself now.
I don't know.
I'm not that old.
I don't know Grizzly Adams. I just know the name. So, the Catholic Herald magazine.
Catholic Herald, our November-December issue.
And what a beautiful picture on the cover.
Yes,
you just like that couple just right now?
Definitely.
Deacon Michael likeable, and Barbara. Humble.
Yeah. Deacon Michael and Barbara Turner from St. Rose Parish in Roseville.
Mm-hmm.
And they are the reef ministry trainers for the Diocese of Sacramento. I know that doesn't sound...
Tough job.
That is, yeah. So they've given reef ministry of consolation workshops in conjunction with Catholic funeral and cemetery services for parishes that want to have a ministry of consolation or a bereavement support ministry.
All parishes don't have one, but
many
do.
Many do, but not every parish, I don't think, has one.
I remember my oldest sister, when her husband died suddenly, and she was at St. Mary's in Vacaville and had no idea that they had a grief ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And she said those people just surrounded her with love and compassion and caring and what do you need? And she said it was you know, and just helping with the service and everything. She said it made all the difference in the world to her.
And actually, many of our ministries, they're not only, of course, the loss of a loved one or a spouse is very devastating, but as you can read in the cover story, their ministry goes way beyond that, because people grieve losses of many things.
Right.
A child, a loss of a job, loss of loss of a marriage, loss of even if you're growing older, loss of some you know, function or maybe what you might have been able to do before and that. So that I had a very interesting interview with them. And Barbara Turner said one of the main things they do when they train consolation ministers is to teach them to listen. She says, grief can come with the loss of a loved one, of a job, of health, or simply the loss of independence as one gets older. When you listen, you journey with people as they tell their stories. Listening is important because we live in a culture that doesn't want to talk about death, doesn't want to give us time to grieve, doesn't even want us to get old. So sometimes people shove their grief aside or swallow it, not seeking support when they need it or dealing with their grief, or they may deal with their grief in unhealthy ways. So they've been giving workshops, as I mentioned, through Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Service. I don't know the upcoming date.
These are workshops to train people.
Right. Yeah, they've had extensive training. They actually, Barbara actually has been with this ministry for more than 20 years, might be like 25 years. And it actually started out at St. Rose as, and this is still a big component of their ministry, of Eucharistic ministers going to the various nursing homes, hospitals in their parish area, which is pretty large, and bringing communion to the sick or to asking any Catholic patients that wanted a visit or whatever. And so that actually was started way back in 1988 with Deacon Peter Salat, who I believe passed away in 2016. He was chaplain at Sutter Roseville Hospital for 30 years.
Wow.
So he's the one with also with Father Michael Cormack, who was the pastor of St. Rose at that time, started this outreach ministry. So they would visit people, patients in hospitals, assisted living, nursing homes like that. They would bring them the Eucharist, Holy Hearts, rosaries, offer prayer. Then over time, the ministry began to focus exclusively on bringing the Eucharist and how that really touched people, just bringing them the Eucharist. And then it's expanded now. I believe they have more than 30 people in this ministry. In fact, Barbara notes that in the past 16 years, we've had four lay ministers, so who were in the ministry. It's called Journey in the Spirit ministry now because it encompasses the whole, doesn't just include bereavement, but includes these visits and anything else people need. She says, in the past 16 years, we have had four lay ministers who did their ministry up until a week before they themselves went on hospice here. I didn't even know they were sick. That's how this ministry touches people and those who work in it. And then we became ministers to them.
So how, how, you know, I guess I always wonder, is there a manual? How did they get their training to train other people?
They trained, I forgot, Sandy Heinch, H-E-I-N-I-S-C-H. She's been a longtime grief bereavement support minister, done a lot of trainings in the from Diocese of Oakland. And I believe she gave trainings here at one time. And then there was also, I don't believe it's still in existence, but there was also a national organization called National Catholic Ministry to the Bereaved. So that's how they got a lot of their. Barbara's been in this ministry many years, 25 years. Michael got into it, I believe, after he retired from the California Highway Patrol. Yes, in 2006, he retired after a 29-year career with the CHP. And little by little, he says he was encouraged by Barbara to be involved in the Eucharistic ministry. They say their own training as grief ministers helped them realize that that the ministry of consolation needed to be added at St. Rose. So 3 years ago, they expanded the Eucharistic ministry to include grief ministry, which, as I said, they call Journey in the Spirit, the whole ministry. She says, Barbara says, we found out that once lay ministers touch the family by bringing the Eucharist to someone, whether in the hospital or at home, or if the person who was visited went to hospice or some other care, they still wanted support to continue. So we saw a disconnect between our ministry to the sick and dying and what happens after death occurs. So they made it kind of an all-encompassing. Hmm. And they've had children of, in fact, I have a little sidebar story here about Helen Daly. She's a parishioner that Barbara visits mm-hmm. regularly. And she is, I believe, I think she's 99 years old. I believe. And she resides at home, not able to come because of physical limitations and other things, to Mass regularly. So Barbara visits her. It was Helen's daughter, Katie, who reached out to the ministry. Helen's daughter says, I took her to Kaiser for counseling for a few times. Then our friend told us about the Journey in the Spirit ministry. So I called. The added plus is that my mom gets communion every week as well. And both my parents were devout Catholics. So her son died unexpectedly, Helen. Mm-hmm. And so the mm-hmm. daughter saw that her mother was having a hard time dealing with her brother's death. And right. so she reached out to the Journey in the Spirit. So it can be a very powerful thing.
Yeah. I think so many of us, I mean, I can remember back the first time it was like a friend's sibling had died or a friend's mother or dad had died or something. I mean, when I was much younger, you know, and like talking to my mom and saying, what do I do? Mm-hmm. Well, you need to go over there. You know, my mom was trying to counsel me. My
sure.
mom didn't have any training.
But
just had lived a good life and knew how you do these things, you know, and I don't want to go over there, Mom. I don't, you know, it's kind of like, obviously, I mean, you don't want to walk into sadness. I mean, that's especially when you're maybe a teenager or you're in college or something, you've never confronted that before, and then you're just worried that you'll say the wrong thing
I think they'll teach you don't even have to say that much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just
say, I'm praying for you. I'm thinking of you. That's what I mean, the few things that I've read. And you never want to say, I know how you feel. That's a tough one.
I remember a high school friend, and I didn't have much connection with him for 20, 30 years, and then his older brother died and didn't really know his older brother, and they were having a rosary at the funeral home, you know, and I just thought, we grew up together,
sure.
you know. I went to the rosary, which is there with mostly people who are much closer to the family and
sure.
family, and a few years later, just a chance meeting with the brother,
uh-huh.
says, I can't tell you how much it meant to me that you came to the rosary. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, you're just like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things, oh, I guess I should go.
Man. Yes.
You know, or am I intruding?
It means a lot,
you know,
to the family.
You know, like I wasn't that close to this family, but am I sort of an intruder here? I mean, is this mm-hmm. just, you know, and so I think you're right. Just the presence. Although I do remember when my dad died after a long battle with Parkinson's and other things, and my mother, the saint, had just worked herself to death taking care of dad. She didn't really want anybody else to take care of dad. That's what she did. And she did it not out of duty, but out of love, you know,
sure.
and wasn't getting a lot back from dad, you know,
yes.
I mean, you know, and,
yeah.
And I remember a neighbor, a longtime neighbor, came over to the house. I was at the house, and he said, I greeted him at the door, and he says, well, you know, it's the best thing for Dorothy, for your mom.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
And I looked at him, and I said, don't say that to my mom.
Yeah.
Don't,
there's a couple
yeah,
things you
yeah,
don't say.
Don't say that to my, because
yeah.
she didn't think it was the best thing.
Yeah.
Like. She no longer had this burden.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why sometimes less words are more in that
yeah.
situation.
Yeah. Just be here and give her
yes.
a hug. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I hope people will read that cover story. We have also a related story about three parishioners at St. Joseph Parish in Elk Grove who started, a couple of them went to the bereavement ministry training, and they discovered that one of the apps was it was not being offered in Spanish. And so George Alvarado, Olivia Sosa, and Tony, I have to look up his name here, Tony Salmonta from St. Joseph Parish, have been the leaders of the bereavement ministry and support group in Spanish at St. Joseph for the last few years. And so I did an interview with George. He lost his older brother suddenly at age 58, five years ago. And he's so funny. He says, I wanted to be macho and not show my feelings at all or anything. And then his neighbor, Tony, asked him to come and observe the bereavement support group, as Tony was already doing it, involved with it in English. And so over time, they decided there needed to be. And then they talked to Olivia, who was another one of their neighbors, who I believe had lost her father during this same time period. So the three of them worked together with Marilyn Petrusa, who coordinates the Ministry of Consolation in English. And they took all the materials in English and translated culturally, language, and everything into Spanish. So that took them a while before they had launched the ministry after doing all that. And then they wanted to add in other materials of their own, do some research. And so they offered it. They offer now, I believe they offer this twice a year at St. Joseph Parish. They get people from many other parishes who want to be a part of it, whose parish maybe doesn't offer, and especially whether if it's offered in Spanish. George has also gone to St. Peter and All Hallows Parish, working with Sister Yeramina Mendoza, and helped start the ministry at St. Peter and All Hallows in Spanish. So Olivia and George are still leaders in the ministry. Tony moved, although he's in the photo. He helped me back this summer when I took that photo, but he moved to be closer to family in Oklahoma. But he was one of the...
That's a tough commute.
Yeah. He was one of the ones who established the ministry.
Now, fess up. Do you pick these people because they're all so happy and smiling and joy-filled? I mean, the photos
I brought them donuts. I don't know.
they're inspiring photos because I joke. I say, well, they're good-looking. You know, I think everybody that God created is good-looking, but they are so joyful.
Well, I can't. I took that photo, the one of the three parishioners from Elk Grove. But our fabulous photos for the cover story are by Jose Luis Villegas. And also,
Work for the Bee or works for the Bee?
He's actually staff photographer at UOP. But he didn't retire.
Retired.
They kind of offered some of the bees.
A lot of people took buyouts.
So, but he's an excellent. And also, we have photos in this issue by Steve German that deal with three or four stories. All the Catholic cemeteries information. So, but yeah, these are. In fact, Barbara Turner sent me a note saying, I had no idea we'd be on the cover. I said, that's the idea. I don't tell people
you
when they're on the cover.
Yeah,
it gets people, not everybody, but if you tell them in advance, they're sort of like, oh my gosh, oh no, not me on the cover. No.
Yeah.
So I found it's better not to, And sometimes, I mean, most of the time I know, but if there was some, I don't know, there was something that came up at the last minute and I had to switch somebody off the cover. I don't want to have told them, oh, you're on the cover. And then they get the magazine like, I'm not on the cover. That'd be kind of disappointing. So I have to have some secrets.
Yes. And it's not the jinx that, you know, Sports Illustrated, they put you on the cover and you're jinxed.
Oh, what's the jinx? You no longer have your baseball career or something?
Yeah, whatever. You know,
really?
It's a well-known jinx. You know, don't want to be on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Oh, wow.
Gabe, you know about the sports. Yeah, he's nodding. Yeah,
he's nodding.
Were you on the cover one time and it was the end of your football career? Yeah, there. He was about to win the Heisman Trophy.
What about your, I'm the wrong magazine. Never mind. The Sports Illustrated at the swimsuit? Yells?
I would not know.
Oh, you wouldn't know. You're looking at Gabe, and he says he doesn't know either. I'm sure it did not end there. I'm sure it did not end their careers.
Yeah.
Okay. We do not have a swimsuit edition of the Catholic Herald, not yet. So we do also have an article by James Kavanaugh, who you talk to frequently, and
yes.
I asked him to write something for people about what does the Catholic funeral actually mean? What are the parts of it? If you're helping, if you're put in the position of helping to plan one or help remember a loved one this way, what do you do?
Yeah.
So,
James Kavanaugh is he is a fount of knowledge. I'll tell you any question I have about the church or the history of the church or Christianity in general or religion in general, he knows everything.
Wow.
I sit here like I'm in a seminar, a one-on-one seminar.
Okay.
He comes on once a week for an hour, and it's just like fascinating. I'm just like,
well, that's great.
I turn my mic off and I just let him go.
So I hope people will read that because, you know, there are three parts for the funeral: the vigil for the deceased, the funeral mass, and the committal. So, and this doesn't change whether you're having full body burial or if you're having cremation. It all remains the same. So I think it's important for people to read that. We also have a story.
That's from James Kavanaugh, the director of the Office of Worship and Prayer.
And we also have a feature on Elsa Sacato, who was a longtime parishioner of Holy Rosary. Mm-hmm. We worked together with Mercy Hospice here locally. I asked them if there would be a patient in hospice who would be willing to do an interview with us, and also perhaps a hospice nurse. So we really lucked out here. We had Elsa, and we also have Patty Zavala, who was her main hospice nurse that visited her. Although when you're in hospice, you have kind of a whole team that's working with you. And we also arranged to have her daughter, Ann Knoll, who lives way up by Wairika, come for the interview. And so it's a beautiful story about Elsa. In the last few months of her life, when she knew it was going to be the last few months, she wanted hospice here in her home. She wanted to die at home. And I'm not sure that Elsa and Patty knew each other. I don't think they knew each other as parishioners, even though they were both parishioners. And Elsa kind of, you know, she wanted to be at home, be comfortable. And she would call everyone who was part of her hospice team angels. She says, I have a lot of angels. I'm going to know it's going to be in my bed at home. When he's ready for me, I'll be here. So she was quite sure of God's will for her life, however that would be play out. And her story about getting to hospice here began about 2 years ago. She was having MRI because they thought she had cancer. And her doctor, actually, at Woodland Healthcare, determined she had been living with liver disease for quite a long time, possibly since her birth.
Oh, my goodness.
But they had not discovered this. So she, by June of this year, she learned that the final stages of the disease had begun. And so that's when she asked about hospice here, she and her daughter, which, as you know, hospice here is you have to be determined by two physicians that you have 6 months or less to live. Right. And then at that point, you're not doing anything curative.
Right.
You know, you're...
It's about comfort.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, comfort which is and, a little and different care. Than palliative.
Right.
Palliative, you know, there's some overlap, but palliative could be, let's say, I don't know, I have COPD or I have emphysema or something. Right. There are certain things that you can do that will help you avoid being rushed into the ER all the time.
Or chronic pain.
Or chronic pain,
like arthritis pain or something. It's not necessarily fatal, but it's just really hampering your quality of life.
Yeah.
But palliative care is certainly part of
hospice care
as well, and making a person as comfortable.
Yes.
As well. In fact, it's amazing to me. I know during the quote unquote assisted suicide debates that were going on when California passed the law and Oregon and Washington, people were saying, "Well, it's just not fair that people should live in intractable pain." And physicians that I've talked to, not just on this show, but just physicians I know because my mother had a lot of chronic pain, said that you find a different doctor because there are, in most cases, not in all, but in most cases, we can take care of the pain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So...
And it's something that the church very much believes in.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And we've had other articles in that, but I don't think it's a bad idea to have a reminder for people because I do think there's still a bit of an impression out there in people's thoughts that just because we have all this great medical technology and things out there that everything must be done when... You know, church teaching
heroic
says you have
to save the person.
Yes.
Which is not required.
Required by church teaching. And this is a beautiful example, actually, of someone, Elsa. I shouldn't say that Elsa, this story was done, the interview, I believe, was done with her in July or early August. She passed away on September 27th, peacefully, surrounded by her family in her home. So I have that as an editor's note at the end of the story, as she was gracious enough to share some time with us so that people could learn, really. And this story was written by Lynette Magnino, who's one of my freelancers, did a beautiful job with
it.
Elsa would say she wasn't able to attend church, but she looked forward to the Eucharistic ministers who would bring her communion. Parishioner Julianne Morin would visit her on Wednesdays and on Saturdays before the vigil mass and bring her communion. Elsa says she brings me communion, my bulletin, and messages from my priest.
Mm-hmm.
She would come every time I would ask her. She also loved talking to people on the phone. She had her, quote, pew buddies from Holy Rosary that she loved talking to because they all sat together in church and their friendship continued even though Elsa had not come to church still.
So she went to that beautiful church on Court Street in England. Yeah, it is. It's just such a beautiful church.
And the lovely thing about this, too, is, as I mentioned, Patty Zavala, who was one of her nurses, I think worked with her the most. She's a certified hospice and palliative nurse. She journeyed with Elsa through the whole experience. She herself is a Holy Rosary parishioner since 1990. She says she may have wondered if she had even seen Elsa in church before circumstances brought them together. But she said, regardless, the bond of their faith strengthens and enriches Patty's own visit. So beautiful story of, you know. And Patty says, unlike any other part of healthcare, when we're facing the end of our lives, we come right up against the divine. It's an honor for me to share that time of life with people of any faith, and especially when it's my own religion. She revealed how her role as a hospice nurse supports the range of feelings and spiritual complexities that accompany death, and how, quote, these emotions and sensitivities are just as important as the physical things that we help with.
Mm-hmm.
So Patty really brings a spiritual dimension to her work. Patty continues, there's just a lot of spiritual angst around dying. She says, having experienced this truth over an entire career of frontline exposure to powerful end-of-life moments, faith made me way, way back. Or maybe a person hasn't been to church or isn't particularly religious, and all of a sudden, it's very important. She emphasized how the entire hospice care program walks with the patient and family, responding to the physical and to the spiritual and physical dimensions of care needs. And Anne, Elsa's daughter, was very thankful for this because she lives up, I believe, like by Wyrica Hornbeck?
Hornbrook. Hornbrook. Right. It is the.
It's a suburb of Wyrica.
Yeah, suburb. See, where the agricultural inspection station is when you're coming, coming in.
I knew I'd seen
it. It's right on the Oregon border. On Interstate 5.
So obviously it was a long drive
that's
for Anne.
Even longer than Wyrica.
Yeah. Yeah. For Anne to come to be with their mother, although she was there a lot.
Wow.
But.
We live our lives as if we're never going to die.
Yeah.
And then you get, the unmistakable terminal, or you can just tell it on yourself, and you go, I am going to die.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of knew that, but I didn't really ever address it. And, I can remember a university professor calling me one day, not a close person at all, and he says, I'm 85, and I just got a bad diagnosis,
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I know you're Catholic. I'm not. He says, but I'd really like to talk to you. Mm-hmm. And it was like to me? Do you know what I mean? But it was like, in his mind, I went to church or something.
Yeah.
And in his mind, he was dying, and maybe I better think about it was.
Of course, for those of us who are Catholics, it's not the end.
Of course not.
Well, our lives are changed.
Actually,
but
even if you're not Catholic, it's not the end.
Yeah.
surprise. I don't, not with any amusement, but you do wonder people who have, like sort of a dedicated atheist, mm-hmm. the people that are out there pushing atheism, not just people say, I just don't have, have the gift of faith.
A lot of people are just indifferent.
Yeah, they're indifferent. Like a Stephen Hawking, who was just, he was very, very brilliant, but very much said, there's no God. Don't believe that stuff.
Oh, uh-huh.
And recently died, and you wonder, is he going to go, wow.
Yeah.
Wow,
of course, he was such an incredible example of not giving up on life.
Exactly. And is he going to go, how did I miss this? With all my brilliance and all my understanding of the cosmos and everything, how did I miss this?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
So, I hope people will read that. I wanted to just mention, as I learned some about hospice in this, Elsa's hospice team included up to 6 professionals doing everything they could for her. Patty Zavala, the nurse, and her colleagues rotate visits attending to Elsa's medical needs. A social worker also visits to create the caregiving plan, define resources, and offering counseling services as needed. A home hospice aide would assure Elsa's personal care, and a non-denominational chaplain facilitates spiritual and practical needs, coordinating with the patient's church and ensuring funeral planning. Patty Zavala, the nurse, says, I can't give less than 100% because these are people who are dying.
Mm-hmm.
She thinks about one of her greatest challenges. I never know when I leave the house. She pauses and continues. I say goodbye in my mind every time because I don't know if I'll ever see her again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So can you imagine that as part of your work?
Yeah. It's, yeah. And You know, I mean, you do all the time. Oh, see you later, or see you tomorrow, or and you don't know if you will.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it just really gives new meaning to that old phrase. There's no place like home.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it really. The difference between, I mean, you could be in a hospital setting and people are just as good, as kind and caring as you can be, but boy, it's not home.
True.
You know, and
And that's why I think we should all be appreciative of the great strides that have been. Well, actually, everybody used to pretty much die at home.
Yeah.
You know, unless you were in a Western gunfight or something and died on the street.
Right. No, it's true. It's true. And, you know, I remember with my mom when she died, she wasn't officially in hospice, but she was at home and she had had a stroke and it was a pretty predictable downhill slide. And yet a group of women from St. James in Davis would come over and pray the rosary with her.
Uh-huh.
And it just seeing the difference in my mom.
Yeah.
With when these women would come and pray the rosary with her was just overwhelming.
Wow. So I also want to mention, so those are a couple of stories or three stories. And we also have three stories related to our Catholic funeral and cemetery services. And in addition to the article by James. I found this extremely interesting. We interviewed, well, this is Lynette's story, and we interviewed Heaven Dance and Diane Orden. Mm-hmm. And they are family service advisors at Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services. I love the lead. An occupation in funeral services may not be a top-of-mind career choice among the larger population. But for Heaven Dans and Diane Orden of St. Mary Cemetery and Funeral Center, what about them? Well, they love their work. Their family services advisors, which are available at the four funeral centers we have in the diocese, Heaven says, God's direction. He remembers how he needed a job as a student at Modesto Junior College. A 3x5 card pinned to the bulletin board in the placement center advertised a position at a funeral home. They needed someone to run errands, wash cars, sweep sidewalks, take flowers in the cemetery. Describing how the interview resulted in his on-the-spot hiring. Within months, he realized he liked it and commenced a lifelong career that included training and licensures for work as an embalmer, funeral director, and funeral home manager. He's been on the staff at St. Mary Cemetery since 2001.
Wow.
He admits, never in my wildest ideas did I imagine this, but I like the service component of it, and I like helping people. He describes that he feels comfortable and even gifted to work with people at deeply emotional and difficult times. Diane also describes how I would have never picked this, but God put me here. She accepted the position at St. Mary 7 years ago. I was there actually the day we took the photographs, and she told me she'd lived all her life in Michigan. She was involved in a layoff of her whole workplace division. And she said she was out of work for 9 months. She said, God, what do you want me to do? And actually, she told me she was not particularly close to the church or anything during that time. She decided to move to California. She applied for the position. And 2 weeks later, she got the call to be a family service advisor. I love this. Quite certain that her devout mother had prayed that God would lead Diane back to her faith.
Wow.
And she had, and I don't remember all the circumstances, but she had lost a few friends, I believe, like a fiance or a boyfriend and someone else to motorcycle accidents in Michigan. So she told me she didn't want to be anywhere near death. Yeah. But she says, I put the application out there and this happened. At 55, I have found my mission in life. She says it's the best job she's ever had. So they help people both pre-need and at need.
I bet it's a common story. It's not one of those. I mean, you stop 100 high school kids and say, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Yeah, too many people will say that an embalmer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
but they really, really help people. And she says it's all about making sure families have all the information they need about the options available to them. So they work to with families to pre-plan funeral services and cemetery needs. In the event of death, people who come for their loved ones who have no prior arrangements, then they work with them to plan everything. And, of course, there are many, many different things to plan regarding the vigil, the funeral mass or memorial mass, the committal. One thing... Kevin says, of course, they both recommend that you pre-plan just because of making things a little bit easier for your family.
Is pre-planned is a gift.
Yes.
It's a gift to your family because you love them and you care for them.
He says it can be emotional and there can be disagreements. This means if you're just at need and you haven't. As a lot of times, and I'm sure we've all heard instances of this, sometimes mom or dad pre-plans or whatever, and the kids don't even know.
Right.
And so it is a gift to them. Or if they haven't pre-planned, sometimes the children come in and really they don't, a lot of times, have any idea of what the parent wanted, unfortunately. Yeah. A lot of times they do.
Like, I feel like you're lecturing me.
No.
Because with my mom, the five of us adult kids getting together, and it was like, five Jaybirds barking at each other, you know. Uh-huh. Like, oh, no, mom would want it. Oh, mom
would she have
this.
Wanted that reading? Yeah. No, she wouldn't have wanted that song.
No. You know, and it's like, you go, whoa, you know, and we're all close together in age, you know, five of us. And,
And
we all very opinionated. And
yes.
It was like, we need to take a deep breath and step back, count to 10, to all those things. But I remember that, you know, and I thought,
the other thing is that it doesn't mean things are locked in stone. You know, in fact, let's say you decided whatever, or mom decided she wanted everything at the funeral center.
Right.
Well, maybe later on you decide to move the funeral mass to her parish, you know. So, you know, there's a lot of flexibility, I guess is what I should say. And I don't want to speak on this. You can have Jerry Delthorn, Holzamore, or someone.
Yeah.
Come on. I do want to mention, too, one thing we're doing. I don't know if you mentioned it, but one thing we started, I believe, a couple magazines ago, is we are now trying to get some of the people that we interview for stories on the radio.
On the radio, yeah.
So then we can link their...
quite successful, and we love doing it.
Okay, good. Yeah. As I haven't followed everything, but now, so we can put the story from the magazine on the website and then link it to the interview.
Right.
So let's say you had Kevin and Diane on talking about being family service advisors, and people on our website can read the story and... then listen. Yeah.
It's wonderful.
So,
we are with Julie Sly, the editor of Catholic Herald magazine, and we're looking at the newest edition, hot off the press, the November-December 2019 edition.
So another feature story was about Nicole Zamora and Eddie Goff. They're both parishioners at St. Clair Parish in Roseville. Sorry about that. And they tell how they became friends as a result of the death of Nicole's mother, Consuelo Roberts. Nicole's mother, Consuelo, had moved from Stockton to live with Nicole and her husband and their two sons in Roseville because she had... recurrence of cancer, and they wanted her to be close to family. And so after she moved, she met Eddie at a faith sharing group that met, I believe, every Monday at the church.
And we should point out that Eddie is a woman.
Eddie's a woman, yes. She's, but it's E-D-D-I-E.
Yeah.
Yes. And Eddie became close friends with Consuelo, Nicole's mother, mm-hmm. in the face-sharing group. And then she continued, when Consuelo had not continued to come to the face-sharing group because of illness, then Eddie would visit Consuelo in Nicole's home.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, shared a lot together. And then during this time, Consuelo decided to make her pre-plan her funeral and cemetery arrangements. So she did. It turns out that Eddie, not coordinating or anything, had been deciding to make her arrangements at Calvary Cemetery and Funeral Center the same time.
Wow.
So they went out to Calvary one day together, and it turned out that they had both picked out their final resting places right next, you know, pretty close to each other in the same area right behind the chapel. So that was another special bond in their friendship. In fact, Eddie says, I asked Consuelo if she had picked a place for burial, and she said yes. I asked her where it was. She showed me her place on the back lawn, and I said, that's where mine is.
Hmm.
So it was just coincidental. They had never planned it
right.
together or anything. And Nicole also shares the her story of being the daughter and how it helped her out that her mother specified ahead sure. of time everything that she wanted. Sure. In fact, her mother, this is an instance of being able to change and be flexible with what you want. I believe her mother, or Nicole's mother, Consuelo, had originally stated that she wanted her mass at the chapel at Calvary.
Mm-hmm.
And then once she moved to Roseville, became a member of St. Clair, and that she decided that she wanted the funeral mass moved back to St. Clair
mm-hmm.
because she had become a member of St. Clair and gotten to know people there in the face-sharing group. So, and Nicole loves it because she can bring with, I believe every cemetery has mass, correct, on Saturdays. Is it Saturday or Sunday at 10 a.m.?
I better not say.
All right. They have mass every weekend.
Right.
We'll get the details for you. But, and so she can bring her family to mass and then be right there to put flowers at her mom's grave site. And so Nicole reflects now, and in planning her funeral and cemetery needs, my mom ensured that her wishes were met and provided peace of mind for herself and her loved ones. I was blessed because I got to witness all of my mom's wishes unfold with the experience of her death, funeral, and burial. And it turns out now, not related to this at all, but Nicole eventually, a couple months before her mom died, took a job as the outreach coordinator with Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services. So she says, as I now talk about the importance of advance planning, I'm not talking about what someone explained to me. I'm speaking from my own experience in a personal way. I don't wish this on anyone, but it was destined for me to learn about this ministry through my mom's death.
Mm.
So they share a beautiful friendship. So,
wow. And according to the story, Eddie is one of the founding members.
She's one of the founding members of St. Clair, I believe, in 2002, I think. That's, I think, how long they've been doing the face-sharing group, or almost as long. Yes. And then we also have questions and answers here about Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services. Jerry Delcor, our CEO of Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services. I'm sure he's been on with you before. I said, just pick the top 10 questions people ask you.
Right.
And so we've gone in here. Who is Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services? What are the options available? Why choose the Catholic Cemetery? How do I select the best burial option for me? So I hope people were through that. We do have... they have their beautiful upcoming event next month. This is going to be the 18th annual Remembrance Tree and Candlelight Vigil. services. They'll be on Wednesday, December 11th from 7 to 9 p.m. at St. Mary here in Sacramento, Calvary and Citrus Heights, All Souls in Vallejo, and St. Joseph Cemetery in Woodland. So this is a chance for people to come and remember their loved ones with the special decorated memorial ornament and to come for the service. People can actually come early and make their own ornaments.
And it's always a beautiful ceremony.
Yes.
And all four, like you say, are at the same time, December 11th,
yes,
which is a Wednesday, 7 to 9 p.m.
Yes. What a beautiful celebration to have during Advent.
Right.
So, even though we know November is the month of All Saints, All Souls. But, so anyway, and then we have Father Murphy's column, Father Jim Murphy.
Who has a long association with the Catholic Church.
Yes, he does. And he talks about Meister Eckhart, medieval theologian, who is arguably, he says, one of the greatest mystics of Christian tradition.
Hmm.
And his column, I'll let you read it, talks a lot about his reflections on the afterlife and eternity.
Very interesting.
And
yeah,
so
his column is always provocative. And of course,
yes,
you have
Bishop's column
near the front of the Herald.
And he's talking a little bit about religious liberty in our society today, and also how Catholic teaching possesses common sense that's really for the common good of society. And he notes, our human reason can bring others to God's wisdom. Our humble human acts of charity can reveal God's merciful touch. When we practice our faith in a public way, we are walking in the footsteps of Jesus. Our public lives as disciples of Jesus give others a reason to follow Jesus.
Well, you know, the bishop makes a great point in that the founding fathers, when they what we call the first freedom, all in the First Amendment, for freedom of religion and speech and peaceably assemble, etc. They put religion first. Maybe it was intentional, maybe it wasn't, but they certainly wanted it in that First Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just, okay, we need to let people be religious if they want to be religious. That's part of freedom. I mean, sure, there was a little bit of that there, but they put it in there because they felt that religious freedom was good for society, that religious people added greatly to the common good, and which is one of the points that the bishop is making. Yeah, it's not. I mean, imagine if the Catholic Church disappeared. Think of how many people would be falling quickly through the safety net.
That's true.
In so many fields, in so many areas of life, the Catholic Church is there to help.
Right.
You know, just it's mind-boggling.
So most people shouldn't probably receive their issue by now. And we do have our issues for 2020, but I don't have my themes off the top of my head. So,
we'll have
it on the website. I do want to mention that anytime you want to look in a past edition or a digital edition, or of course, you can always call me at 733-0175 if you want a past magazine.
Oh, very good.
Have it, I'll certainly send it to you.
Oh, excellent. And that's in the 916 area.
916-733-0175.
Oh, very good.
If there's some issue or article you missed. But you may also go to all of our digital editions or online at the website at scd.org/Catholic Herald. And we have all our issues going back to 2010. In fact, less than a year from now, will be our 10th anniversary. We started with the September-October issue in 2010, when I was less grizzled.
When you were still in college.
It's amazing how I got this job right out of college.
Yes. And the Herald goes all the way back to what, 1902
1908,
or something? 1908.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
So Don't ask me to send you an issue from January 23rd, 1922.
Those are around somewhere, right?
Those are, we do have most of our bound volumes. We do have them on microfilm or fiche. I forget what the difference is.
I don't know what the difference is either.
But, you know, we no longer have the reader anymore. That's the problem.
Where you can actually read the stuff.
And actually, yeah. You know, it's lighted up on a screen or whatever.
But try looking at it, you get dizzy.
Yeah, and we used to send people over to Sac City College for that. Mm-hmm. But honestly, that's been years ago. I don't even know if they still have it. I know Father John Bull, when he was the archivist, was trying to look for one of those to purchase. But it was very difficult to even find them to purchase anymore. It's like trying to buy a rotary telephone.
Yeah, it's the old technology.
So, man, some of our bound volumes really are, you know, they're really in pretty precarious shape. You know, sometimes you page through and the page kind of comes apart in your hand. So you have to be careful with those. And I think actually, I have to give many thanks to Father Bull for a few years ago. He put some of those into safekeeping in storage as they simply can't. I mean, you can handle them, but it's difficult. You wouldn't want to take it to a hoppy machine and open up the bound volume and try and make it hoppy. Otherwise, all the pages would fall out. So,
well, Julie,
thank you for all this time. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
Okay.
This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is Bishop William K. Wiegand, the Bishop Emeritus of Sacramento, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Denning.